tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's December 2021, and this is episode 265, which is a spoiler-filled conversation about the Netflix series Squid Game. Today's guest is Dr. Kevin Scutt, who is Professor of Media and Communication and the Program Lead for the Game Development Program at Trinity Western University in Langley, British Columbia, Canada. Kevin is the author of the book Of Games and God, A Christian Exploration of Video Games, and he has published a wide range of scholarly and popular articles on numerous cultural issues surrounding video games. Kevin has written an exclusive online television series review about Squid Game for the Christian Research Journal. His review is called Searching for God's Grace in Squid Game's Bloody Violence. And you can read it for free at our website, equip.org. Now, normally, we have our articles that are exclusive online content only available to our subscribers. But this is such a popular series that we would like to offer it to everyone for free on our website, so you can get a taste of the in-depth online exclusive content that you can receive as a subscriber to our journal. Kevin, it's good to have you on.
Well, it's good to be here.
Well, today we're talking about the cultural phenomenon Squid Games, which is on Netflix, as I mentioned, and it's garnered quite a bit of buzz. I think a lot of young people are watching it, as well as the costumes. You know, people wear some of the Squid Game characters for Halloween this year, and it's just received a lot of attention, probably because of the nature of the show itself. It's actually an export from South Korea, and it's the actual show is in Korean itself with subtitles, and it's been very popular. I believe it's one of the top watched shows on Netflix. But first, before we talk about the show and its plot, because it's extremely violent, there is one very brief explicit sex scene, but certainly not as explicit as a lot that is on American television. But the main thing is the graphic nature of the violence, which is not cartoonish. It's quite gruesome. It's quite over the top. And so the question that is often asked when we post some of these podcasts on shows, which we're doing cultural apologetics with, and that is, this is completely inappropriate for Christians. Why should Christians even be allowed to watch Squid Games? I mean, can Christians even watch it? And because does the actual presence of sensuality or swearing and violence make a piece of entertainment completely out of bounds for the Christian? And I just want to read these two sets of verses just to consider this. And the first is in Ephesians 3 through 12. I won't read the whole entire passage, but it does say, but sexual immorality and all impurity, and I would assume graphic violence is in all impurity, or covetousness must not even be named among you as proper among saints. Let there be no filthiness or foolish talk nor crude joking, which are out of place, but instead let there be thanksgiving. Walk as children of light. And take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. For it is shameful even to speak of the things that they do in secret, or in this case, very publicly. And Ephesians 4:8, finally, brothers, whatever is true, honorable, just, pure, lovely, whatever is commendable, if there's any excellence, think on these things. And so those are questions that, you know, the Christian might be asking, because many Christians would see this as very immoral. But I also want to give a quote before I would like to hear what you think about this from the article we did many years ago on the Hunger Games, and our listeners can read that at equip.org. It's free on our website. And the author, Holly Ordway, wrote this. She quoted C.S. Lewis, who talked about the watchful dragons, and she said, quote, the watchful dragons of skepticism are alive and well in the minds of many readers who will simply reject a story with overt Christian elements. One approach is for authors to circumvent those watchful dragons by subtle handling of Christian themes in their work, as C.S. Lewis did. A different approach is for apologists to get past modern dragons by using non-Christian stories to explore the truths of Christianity. So is this a series in which we can explore truths of Christianity at all?
Yeah, that's a big question. There's a lot of different dimensions that we can go down. I think, one note to start off with right off the bat is just to say that I absolutely do not think that this is anything like required viewing for anyone, that for many people, this probably isn't a series that you should watch. It is very disturbing in many ways. I would imagine that someone who has experienced violence in their own lives might find something this graphic to be quite disturbing. I would think it would have a significant emotional impact on you to watch something like this. So this is not a show for everyone. The bigger question of whether it's possible for Christians to watch violence at all, I think, is a good one to tackle. I think that one of the things that we need to start with is just the realization that violence is part of our existence and that we do need to grapple with that. And part of grappling with that, part of dealing with the violence in our society and our lives is the stories that we tell. In fact, if we want our stories to actually have a significant impact, I mean, we're going to have to deal with violence and not shy away from it. So I think that that's one really important consideration. Another really important consideration is to note that not all violence is the same. The fact is that a lot of Christians engage pretty regularly with violent stuff. I mean, if you're a football fan, watching people slam into each other at high speeds on a regular basis and, you know, do all the posturing and booyah kind of, you know, excitement of someone slamming into someone else, that's real violence. That's not even in staged violence where nobody's actually getting hurt. Like, these are people who actually have their bodies largely destroyed over the space of, you know, 10 or 15 years, so that, you know, you got these 35-year-old NFL retirees who are basically walking wounded for the rest of their lives. And people watch that and they're like, yeah, this is totally cool. I mean, I think if we're going to have a serious discussion about violence and worry about it, I think we might actually want to start there before we start talking about fake representations on television shows. But I think the bigger point is that not all violence on the screen is the same. There is violence in television shows that is meant to entertain, to be pleasurable, to be fun. We think about like it's kind of unfair of me to pick on him, but you know, a Michael Bay movie, right? I always think of Michael Bay movies as this kind of thing where the violence is there clearly for fun. It's not necessarily integral to the story. We put the violence in because that's what draws the viewers, right? And it's exciting and it's sensational. That's one kind of violence. But there is another stream of representation of violence in our popular culture. And that is one that kind of looks at it in an unflinching way. Actual violence is, unless you have sort of psychopathic tendencies, actual violence is not fun. It is painful. It leaves lasting scars on people. It is shocking. And there's a reason that people who, you know, experience violence are struck with post-traumatic stress. There is another kind of popular culture that looks at violence and makes it uncomfortable. And it makes it uncomfortable because it is, in a sense, condemning the violence. And I would say Squid Game kind of straddles the line between those two, but I would say it's closer towards the unflinching look at violence. It is very uncomfortable. And in fact, the overwhelming memory of the show for me is of people getting shot in the head. It happens over and over and over and over again. It's dispassionate. There's no, like, you know, buildup of music or anything like that, you know, sort of the, you know, the guitar sting or exciting music going on in the background. It's like watching a prison camp, essentially. And that's not fun. It certainly wasn't fun for me. It had a huge emotional impact, but it wasn't, let's watch some more people get shot. It was definitely disturbing. That was what it was meant to do. I think putting all violence into the same category, all screen violence into the same category, I think is really problematic when you look at something like that. So I think as part of just taking part of our culture and engaging it, I think that we need to be aware of where our culture is, what we're talking about, the stories that have a significant impact on our culture. I think that we need to avoid celebrating violence, enjoying it for fun. I also think that this particular show, although sometimes it gets into the level of grossing you out for the sake of grossing you out, maybe, I don't know. Some of the stuff, it feels a little bit over the top. There's a lot of violence in there that is disturbing and meant to be disturbing so that you don't enjoy it. And I think that that's actually a really important commentary.
For me personally, I did feel like it was over the top violence. And because I wasn't sitting in the movie theater, I was able to fast forward through some of that violence. But it is interesting. It perhaps is the context of the violence. And then I do want to ask you a little bit more about what the series was about. But it could be that that's what's most troubling, because I think there are R-rated war movies that people watch with the same amount of violence that are about World War II or historical events, and they don't seem as problematic for certain Christians as other kinds of series like this one. So that's just some food for thought for some of our listeners. You will not want to miss out on entering in the contest for a free subscription to the Christian Research Journal. And by the way, this contest ends in a few short weeks on December 31st. I know there are thousands of you out there that download these episodes and you have not entered in yet, because we only have a few entries. Now, if you already have a subscription to the Christian Research Journal, please go ahead and enter in anyway, because your free subscription, if you win, could go to your pastor or a family member or a friend who would enjoy being equipped by our articles. Plus, the bonuses with every subscription, you get access to our online exclusive content that is only available to subscribers. Now, this particular episode, our review about Squid Game, we're making free to everyone so they can get a taste of what some of that exclusive online content is that they are missing out unless they are a subscriber. And a big thank you to two of our listeners who have just given us reviews in the last week or so. Thanks to Stu, and thanks to Texas Teacher Mom for entering into the contest. There's hardly any entries, you guys, so please go ahead and enter. I know it just takes a little bit of your time. That's all it is, just a time. If now you can, we would love to have just a 5-star review from you, but how you actually enter in would be to go ahead and give us a short written review, just one sentence, maybe a couple sentences, and you can just go into Apple Podcasts, which is where we want you to post that review. And the more people that post reviews, the more it helps us out. Our goal was to get to 100 ratings. I don't know that we'll meet that, but we're still running this contest and we'll draw a winner in January. So go ahead and enter in. Another way you can help us out is to give us a tip. And you can do that on our website, equip.org. If you go to magazine at the drop down, you'll see Postmodern Realities Podcast. Just click on that and it'll take you to our main landing page. You can click on any of your favorite episodes, including the most recent one, and you will see a link there where you can give us a tip. Just the cost of like a coffee that you'd normally get, $3, $5, $10, something like that. And thank you to some various generous people who have given us very generous gifts through a tip. So we thank you for that, as well as just you can subscribe to our magazine at equip.org. And thanks for all the different ways that you help get the word out about this podcast, the least of which would be just simply tell a friend. Thanks. Well, now I want to ask you specifically about the content of Squid Game. So what is the series really about? Can you tell us a little bit about the plot?
Yeah. I have to warn people, if you are interested in watching the series, we're going to delve into some of the details of the series, the show today. And I'm sorry in advance for any spoilers. So if you're really, really concerned about that and are intending to watch it, then I'm afraid you're going to have to wait to listen to this. Sort of the non-spoiler summary. This is a series about people who are in Korea, who are down and out on their luck. They're in debt. They're living terrible lives in some way, shape, or form. And they are invited to participate in a mysterious game. When they get out to this isolated island, and there's several hundred participants, they are put into a series of what appears at first to be children's games. The first one is a red light, green light, where, you know, someone says red green light and you're supposed to go forward, and then when they say red light, you're supposed to stop. And what they discover very quickly, already in the first game, is that if you lose at this game, you don't just lose, you're killed. And so it's sort of an arena games kind of scenario, like the Hunger Games, right? And there's a long lineage of these kinds of stories, actually. More recently, Guns Akimbo, that's another example of this. The Running Man back in the 80s. There's a movie, I think it's back in the 30s, called The Most Dangerous Game. Same kind of narrative. I mean, this is the Roman arena, right? So it becomes clear throughout the series that this is run by some wealthy people for entertainment, essentially. And the contestants are poor or deeply in debt, desperate people who are trying to win in order to get a massive financial prize. But of course, there's a 455 out of 456 chance that you're going to die in this process. And so that's what the series is about. It's a survival, death, killing kind of game scenario. And then it plays out over several episodes. There's an ensemble cast, so there's quite a few different characters. But that's the general gist of the series.
You know, it does make me think of, and this is supposedly, you know, in this fictional universe, not stage, they're playing this, but just the entertainment that any of us get out of, I've never watched it myself, but some of these reality shows like Survivor, where they take real people who are contestants and they drop them down in these islands and play some pretty crazy games that could, you know, lead to death. I mean, it doesn't lead to death, but I mean, still, they're some crazy extreme games. So it's not like the kind of format hasn't been explored in entertainment before, that's for sure. It's just this one is much more deadly. So why, you mentioned that they're playing different children's games like Red Light, Green Light. That's something that in the West we do too, but there are some other specific games that they play that might just be Korean or their Korean version of marbles and things like that. So why do you think they're playing these children's games that turn out to be quite deadly?
It's a very interesting choice. And there's a number of reasons why I see this as an interesting narrative choice. And I think it's also one of the reasons that the series has really caught on. There's a number of things about this television show that really make it appealing. And it's not surprising that it's become an international smash hit. The visual design is striking. I would say that the fact that it's set in Korea, it's a Korean production. Korea has become a major exporter of pop culture. I think that's actually another appeal for it. So I think part of the appeal of a series like this is that it is Korean. It's definitely riding on the success of the hit Academy Award winning show movie Parasite. So I think that's part of the appeal. But I think some of the narrative choices are just really, really smart. And I think choosing children's games is actually a really, really good move. It makes it quirky and different. Because here's the thing. What they could have easily done is they could have gone with a more video game aesthetic, right? Korea is actually a major player in global esports and video game culture. I was kind of half expecting that that's where they were going to go when I started watching this series, because it's just such a major part of Korean presence in global pop culture. But really, this is not a series that taps into video games at all. Video game aesthetics of how you handle the camera and do cuts and all the rest of that kind of stuff. Guns Akimbo, that was a movie that was very much inspired by video game aesthetics. This is not. If you want to see sort of a more gentle kind of video game inspired comedy, Free Guy would be, you know, an example of that. That this is not anything like that. It makes no reference to video games. Just the way it handles the visuals is completely different. By choosing children's games, I think they're kind of making it feel old-fashioned. That's one thing, because the fact is kids don't play children's games nowadays. They play video games. That's an exaggeration, but you know, the general point. Also, it taps into this weird sense of innocence, except everything's off a little bit. So everything in the show, the colors are just a little bit too bright. The rooms are kind of sterile. It doesn't really feel like real things at all. And so when it doing these children's things, all of this sort of warm nostalgia that we would sort of associate with kids and kids playing games and stuff like that is inverted and kind of, it's really discordant. It's kind of like an off-key chord kind of feel to it. The one game that's probably a little bit different is one of the episodes they play in a sort of a recreation of a 1950s Korean town or village. That is probably the most emotionally devastating episode of the whole series. And I think that has a lot to do with that one feels a bit warmer. And most of the rest of them, that the kid's story is there to provide kind of a just something that doesn't fit with the horror of what is going on in this scenario. It is a horrible, horrible, disturbing situation. And the fact that they're doing it with kids' games is really, really twisted. It's a very, and that's the whole point. This is a really messed up situation. That's the point.
Well, I agree with you. I think that one particular episode, I think it was episode 6, was quite poignant. And I want to talk to you a little bit about that later. Now, earlier in this podcast, you talked about football and, you know, that we are interested in, you know, watching sports, some of which can be quite violent, like American football. I'm not talking about football in the European sense, soccer, but definitely violence breaks out at soccer games in Europe, for sure, among the fans. You know, is this series primarily a commentary on gaming or watching violent sports for entertainment? And so does that make it immoral for us to watch this TV with this series with this kind of extreme violence that they're showing? And I thought this was really interesting too. One of the conceits of the show is each contestant is given a number. So there's more than 400 contestants, and the one that wins has a particular number. And then also an interesting twist that we can talk about later. The very first contestant, who's a very elderly man, he's contestant number one. And so I kind of thought about how when we cheer on our teams, our sports teams for sure, I know that the numbers on the jerseys are very important. And then later on in the series, when you finally see the people who are watching these games, who set up these games, what are mysteriously known as the VIPs, they are, you know, kind of just seeing each one of these human beings as numbers. And I know we can get really attached to the particular number jersey. So that's just kind of curious to me. So is this a commentary on us watching sports itself or any kind of violent games, MMA or anything like that?
I think probably yes, on some level. I think this is a show that does critique. I think that some of the critiques that it tries to make, it doesn't maybe fully follow through on. I think there's certainly an element of the entire conceit of the series is that, you know, wealthy, comfortable people are watching other people engage in violence for their entertainment. And the show, I think, and this is not my own idea, I've read other critics talk about this, and I think it's actually a reasonable observation. The show is almost kind of implicitly asking, are we doing the same thing even by watching the show, right? Are we watching people fight it out and die so that we can have our own entertainment, which is a little bit weird. It's kind of like, in order to watch this show, we're going to critique you watching the show. It's a strange expectation of the show that they want you to watch it. But on the other hand, just watching it is almost implicitly criticized by the actual show itself. The very thing that you're doing is exactly what the show is saying. Maybe this is not right. I should be clear before I go any further. I'm actually a big sports fan. I grew up in Canada. I watch hockey. I'm Canadian and I live in Canada, and I love hockey, and hockey is a very violent sport. Football, I love football. Those are probably my two favorite sports, and they're both very violent. I'm not saying that watching football is inherently immoral or watching hockey is inherently immoral, but the celebration of violence is a challenge. I think that's what this show very much calls into question. And I think you're right to draw parallel to the numbers on the jerseys. That's something I hadn't really thought about, but I think you're onto something there. There we have these tools. There's multiple sectors of popular culture that kind of dehumanize things. dehumanize the actors and the characters. And it's a little bit weird to say this, because on one level, we have an entire sports industry that is designed to create characters, right? Like, so I know the characters of NFL, you know your Tom Brady, and you know your Aaron Rodgers, and those kind of people, that they're like characters to me, right? Because I've seen interviews, and the people do, you know, background stories, and you have reporters telling us, you know, little anecdotes from their lives and stuff like that. But they're really kind of manufactured characters, right? They're not real people. And the numbers on the jerseys can be seen as a sort of dehumanizing thing. Go out there and fight for my entertainment kind of thing. We're not exactly the Roman emperor, the Roman crowds cheering on people to their death, but there's sort of an element of that. And this show just makes that very, very explicit. The numbers are very dehumanizing in Squid Game. And they are never talked to by their name. They are always talked to by their number. And even the guards, there's an entire subplot in the thing where we get to know the guards to just a limited extent. And the guards are talked to by their numbers as well. So the entire thing speaks of exploitation for the purpose of entertainment. And I think that's the critique. And I think it's not an unreasonable idea to turn that towards our own consumption of popular entertainment, including sports. Yeah.
Well, as we mentioned, there's quite a bit of extreme violence in this series, and that's what makes it so shocking. You know, when you consider it's not just player elimination, it's player death in these games. And so just going back to what was mentioned, I quoted from our article on the Hunger Games in terms of C.S. Lewis thinking that we can use non-Christian stories to explore the truths of Christianity. How does this series, Squid Game, deal with the problem of evil? Because there's so many facets to that, you know, people being exploited for this particular game, that they're trying to find people who could be coerced into playing this because they're so desperate because of personal circumstances, or just even the people themselves, as it kind of disintegrates almost into Lord of the Flies, and you just see all of this evil around. And I will say, the one explicit sex scene, which is extremely brief, I fast-forwarded that through that one, it, to me, did not even seem all that sexual, because it was taking place in such a degradation and such just sheer animal survival. The entire series has that kind of tenor to it as they get into the game. So does this series say anything about the problem of evil?
Yeah, there's multiple dimensions that we could talk about. I do think that's essentially, there are two core parts to this show. And maybe we can get back to the other part in a second. I think on the one hand, yes, it is a stark look at evil and our experience of evil and how meaningless it is and how empty it is. And then also our own moral failings and compromise in the face of challenge. I think that's one of the big things that the series is about. And also the other is that kernel of hope that is possible in life, that courage and resilience in the face of degradation and evil. I do think that is at the core of the series. The series is definitely about how broken we are, and that it definitely, it definitely touches on that. It also does talk about our resilience, possibility of hope in the face of evil. So the whole series is really about those two things. There's some interesting discussion about it, the series as a social commentary on, you know, social inequality, because it's the wealthy oppressing the poor. And some critics have pointed out that the show doesn't seem to really do a very good job of that, because it doesn't really articulate a very clear theory or explanation of, where the problem lies in society. I would agree. I think that as a piece of social commentary, it's incomplete and incoherent. As a discussion of moral value, that's, I think, where the show is strongest. And it talks a lot about the nature of evil very much. I would say that even there, though, it doesn't really provide explanation so much as observation. It doesn't say this is why people are bad. It just shows people being bad. Why do the wealthy oppress the poor? Not real clear explanation for that, other than that they do. It's entertaining to them. I guess where you maybe see a little bit more explanation is when the contestants are definitely the most fleshed out characters in the whole series. The other people are sort of almost stock, stand-in kind of caricatured kind of characters. The contestants, you do get to know them and you understand how they make their bad decisions. And they're very understandable. I mean, I'm not, you know, a Korean gangster, but Jok-soo, who is one of the main characters, he's this petty gangster character and very interesting, like just a super interesting character. And they do such a good job of the acting and the writing that he's a deeply fragile character, even though he's the most violent and in some ways vile character in the entire body of contestants. You can see that he craves acceptance and security and connection. And so all of these decisions he makes to dominate and to kill and to beat, you can see where it's coming from. Other people fail because Sang-woo, who is the friend of the main character, Ji-hoon, state as an aside, I'm not Korean, so I'm not great at pronouncing these names, but I think I've got them mostly right. You know, he came from a poor background and he made it as a major finance person, except that he bet the wrong way and he's now deeply in debt. And he is probably the most morally compromised character in the entire series. And he keeps making these terrible decisions. And you can tell it's because of this position of embarrassment and a sense of his own moral failing that comes from. So the series does tackle the bad decisions that we make. And it also tackles the reality of the cruelty of the world. It just doesn't provide an explanation for it. It just recognizes that it's there and it impacts all of us. And I do think that a series like this has real value in that sense, that it takes a very unflinching look and not flattering look. Like, this is not a kind of show where, you know, the bad guys are kind of sexy. The bad guys in this are yuck. They're gross, disgusting human beings. They're psychopaths. They come off as kind of like, when you watch them giggling about the bets and stuff that they're making, as people are engaged in this terrifying game of life and death, there's nothing but disgust for these people. So it's a very unflinching look at the nature of evil. I'm not sure it's always, theologically coherent, but it is valuable in the sense, for Christians even, I would say, in the sense that it sort of exposes how dark our culture can be and how dark people can be in the decisions that they make.
I agree with you. I think there is a sense in which if you want to have a conversation with someone about, does sin exist? I mean, are people basically good? I think this series makes you think, because put in the most extreme situations, people don't always do the right thing. And so I think that is definitely food for thought. Now, one thing that people might be wondering, our listeners might be wondering, because I mentioned I had quoted from a previous article we had done on the Hunger Games, is this basically just like a hard R version for adults of the young adult series, The Hunger Games?
I think there's definitely parallels. You have the hero who is a reluctant hero, and I would say that Ji-hoon is significantly more flawed character than Katniss Everdeen is, but there is that sense of, you know, a limited character going up against a seemingly insurmountable evil. And it remains to be seen where the series is going to go, because there is going to be a season two. And the way season one ended, it's kind of hard to know where things exactly are. I almost feel like it is going to be a bit of a narrative reset. The Hunger Games has this broader social commentary after the first one with the civil war going on in Pan Am, and this one doesn't have that yet, and maybe it will go there. But there's certainly a lot of the same kinds of themes of, if you put people into a desperate dystopian situation, how are they going to behave, and can we see anything ennobling and positive come out of that scenario? You know, one by one, the cast of characters gets picked off kind of thing. That's definitely there as well. I guess I would say As dystopian as Hunger Games, it is a more humanizing and uplifting series from the get-go. Katniss is just a more sympathetic character. Ji-hun, actually, when I started watching the series, the first episode, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it through this because I just dislike this character so, so much. And then he changes very rapidly as the series goes on. And again, sorry if that's a spoiler, but he becomes much more sympathetic. That made a big difference. But even so, I feel like the characters are not as warm. They're not as deep as the Hunger Games. And that probably reflects the difference between a young adult audience and as you say, an R-rated. But yeah, I would say on the whole, there's a lot of parallels. It's just darker, it's grittier, it's more violent. And again, we will see where the series goes. It may take this in a very different direction than the Hunger Games did. I definitely think there's a parallel, but I think that it's not perfect. There are some differences.
I agree with you. I think contestant of speaking of numbers, 456 Song Ji-hun is very the first episode. I don't think I can make it through this series because this guy is so despicable. Why would he even care what happens to him? He just seems like just a terrible person to begin with. So that was interesting. Now, you touched on this earlier. There have been critical reviews from media experts and reviewers that have said that Squid Game really is making a commentary on social inequality. I mean, is this a political series? Do you think this is trying to make some political points?
I think there's a veneer of that, like it's on the surface, but deep down, I don't think that's what this series is about. Just as background, Parasite, the movie, I would say is a fairly coherent critique of social inequality. Yeah, it sort of provides a fuller portrait of the people being critiqued. I think the biggest problem with Squid Games as a social critique, or its biggest failing as a social critique, is that the wealthy are not in any way fleshed out. There's definitely a narrative of the poor being exploited by the rich. It's definitely there. And so on the surface, it does look like another one of these, you know, critiques of social inequality. Rich people exploit poor people. Unlike Parasite, it doesn't really explain things. It doesn't explain what the wealthy are like or what they're looking for or why that's going on and why they interact with poor people the way they do. It's just taken as sort of a given that, you know, the wealthy in society exploit the poor. And this, again, is not a new narrative theme. I mean, this has been done before in lots of other dystopian narratives, and there's not much social critique to it. So people who are looking for that, This is incomplete. And if you have a problem with that, then you should realize that this is not really what this series is about. This is a series about morality at core. And I think that a lot of contemporary reviewers, trained as they are in sort of, you know, cultural studies kind of approach to culture, are looking for that almost political narrative because that's what they want to see. And I think this is more of an old-fashioned story. I think at heart, it is really about moral failings and moral victories. It's about a fight between good and evil, as we were talking about earlier. I think that is definitely at heart what this series is about. Not so much about sort of a social commentary kind of thing.
I'd like to know if you think that this series has anything to say about the value of human life with its extreme violence. And I'm just wondering, you know, there is a scene at the very end, the last episode, with the contestant number one. Turns out one of the contestants is actually one of the architects of these games, Oh Il-nam, who is a very old man who actually in the game, he tells Song Ji-hun that he has this brain tumor or something like that. And that's true in real life, but he also plays it to his advantage within the games to pretend that he's sicker than he really is, or that he has dementia and he really doesn't. You know, at the end of it, he's saying that he wants to go back. The reason why he chose children's games is he wants to go back to that feeling of happiness, that time of innocence. I get the impression, although it's not really stated, that this particular character is some kind of mob boss or something like that. And he's done a lot of bad things just to make money. He's extremely wealthy. And so he wants to go back to that, you know, age of innocence, which is why he chose these games, ironically, that if you lose, you die. And he also talks about that homeless man. So it's snowing. He's in a hospital deathbed in his, you know, penthouse. And he calls the winner up there, Song Ji-hun. And they had been paired up together in some of the games. And so he calls him up there and he says, well, I can't remember, but he's playing one last game. You know, if something, you know, he sees this homeless man outside. If someone comes to help this guy by midnight, then something, you know, good will happen. At that point, I don't know that Ji-hun really cares. You know, is this something about the value of human life? I mean, in one of the subplots is there's human organ harvesting going on. And yet I found it kind of ironic, right? Because in the middle of some of these games where everyone's dying right and left, if somebody's, you know, bleeding out, someone will say, don't you care to the guards? This person is dying. And it's funny that they say that because you've just seen all this mass violence of all these various numbers get killed off. So is this series, you know, considering the value of a human life?
Absolutely. I think that's one of the core things that it keeps coming back to over and over again. The entire operation that runs the Squid Game is deeply, deeply dehumanizing. Everything about it is, it's kind of the Nazi totalitarian extermination camp mentality, just slightly repurposed for a different setting. People are not people, they are numbers. They are tools for entertainment that can be disposed of at will. Again, there's this scene where the wealthy people are watching the competition going on. And again, they are treated like disposable, they're just treated as pieces on a chessboard, things that you can just manipulate for fun. You can bet on them like you can bet at the horse races. I mean, at the beginning, Ji-hun is betting on horse races. And near the end, the rich people are betting on these humans, who's going to survive and who isn't. But when they lose, what they're upset about is the money that they lost, not the fact that a human being just died. Of course not. The entire thing is set up because, you know, for the elimination of people for fun. It's a deeply dehumanizing setup. And so then that scene at the end becomes, it's the most explicit part of the show dealing with, so what is a human life worth? Early on, the contestants, when someone dies, there's this, but this is a human being. How can you do this? And very swiftly, they realize that, you know, they're up against a machine that doesn't really care at all about that. This is the last gasp attempt at finding some value in humans. And I think because of the very darkness of the series, it does become a very powerful moment when the homeless person, you know, Ji-hun cares about and says, you know, someone will care about this person, and someone does. That is the turn at the end of the series that really means this is not just a dystopia with no real salvation. This is a something that says, yes, humans do actually have value, even though the world often acts as if they don't. And I think that's really at core what this series is about.
So what about Christianity? I mean, is there mentions of Christianity in the series, and is it all negative?
There's very little mention of any kind of religion. If you know anything about Korea, you know that there actually is a very large percentage of the population that is Christian. So it is part of the background, culturally speaking. And so it's not surprising that at least a few of the characters do explicitly touch on religion. When they do, it is not a flattering portrayal. There are two characters in a couple episodes that deal with religious issues. One of the contestants is spouting off biblical language, a sort of apocalyptic biblical language, and is, you know, talking about how they're all being damned to hell for the terrible things that they're doing. He comes off as an inflexible zealot whose only function is to condemn everyone else. And Christianity does not look flattering there. And then this other young woman who becomes a significant character for a couple episodes, and she's constantly sniping with this religious character. And later on, we find out that her father was, in fact, a pastor. He was a deeply abusive man who used religion almost as an excuse to do horrible things to his family. And she actually ends up murdering him and ends up in prison and has just gotten out. And that's why she's in this game. So the two moments where Christianity is explicitly referenced, it comes off very poorly. I think that if we left it at that, we would say this is sort of an anti-Christian show. I think the deeper narrative structure of the piece is much more in tune with the Christian worldview. This is the paradox of the series and one of the characteristics of our culture. The article on Hunger Games that you referenced earlier talks about how for many people in our culture, Christianity is in fact coded exactly as the explicit mentions of Christianity in Squid Game are coded, which is that Christians are judgmental, inflexible, don't actually care for the world. For many people, this is what their appreciation of what religion is. And so if you want to tell a story with Christian values, you can't talk about Christianity or they'll just tune you out, basically. And so this is sort of, you know, a story that is largely devoid of religion is one where you can slip a lot of religious themes and ideas in. That's definitely true of the Hunger Games, where there's really no mention of religion at all, positive or negative. It's just a world without religion. It's also true, by the way, of Lord of the Rings on some level. And the you know, Tolkien, who was a devout Catholic and was very committed to the idea to religious values and Christian values, slipped it in all over the place, right? I would say that that's certainly not the case with The Hunger Games. And I would say in Squid Games too, it's at a pretty deep level. There is a sort of a creation, fall, redemption narrative for a Reformed Christian. That's a sort of standard kind of way of looking at the world, that God created a good creation. It's been corrupted by sin, but that Jesus has broken in and is making a difference. Maybe the creation part, the perfect creation part is missing in this story, but certainly this notion of fall and redemption, of darkness, salvation is there, that there is hope in the middle of dark. I think it's a profoundly Christian narrative. I have no idea whether the creators of the show mean for that or not. I wouldn't be surprised if they do not intend to sort of create parallels, but all truth is God's truth. And this notion of darkness and redemption, of the possibility of hope in a situation where everything seems beyond hope, I think is a very powerful message in this series. And I think it's one that is deeply in tune with the Christian story of salvation through Jesus.
So in these games, there is an ultimate winner, and we find out in the actual process of the games that there's a side plot involving a police officer who sneaks in. I won't spoil all the backstory of that, and he ends up getting caught towards the end of the series, but you know, he discovers that there's a list of winners, and so there are winners in this game, and they win this exorbitant amount of money. I mean, in the particular one that we watch, Contestant 456, which we mentioned, Song Ji-hun has won what is the equivalent in Korean currency of $38 million, which is a lot of U.S. currency. And so he wins these things eventually. I think at the end, I don't think people even care if they're winning. They're just trying to survive. And he's unable to spend this money at all. It fast forwards a year and he's just kind of looks, he's not taking care of himself. He looks like a homeless person and he hasn't spent any of this $38 million. So what exactly have they won besides money?
Well, I think this is what marks Ji-hun off as a sympathetic character and one that we can on some level admire, because I think the implication is that a number of the victors have in fact moved on and enjoyed their spoils. And in fact, we find out that one of the lead operators of the game, the character called the front man, is in fact himself a previous victor. So I think for some of them, they have won exactly what the game intends for them to win, which is life is a brutal competition. If you come out on top, then you have triumphed. And that's what life is about. It's a struggle of survival of the fittest, and you are the fittest. And I think that, you know, going through the records, that is the implication. Ji-hun, on the other hand, recognizes that victory is a poison pill, that if you win in the game of survival of the fittest and you accept that that is all that life is, it's a hollow victory. There's no real love. He's bereft. He's lost all his relationships by the time he's done. Anything that he actually cared about is gone and broken. And so he realizes that money is ultimately, it's something that everyone keeps chasing after and is ultimately hollow. The entire series basically says that all of these things that we are chasing after all the time are ultimately hollow things. You know, the wealthy people who run this game, they're not really happy. That scene you mentioned at the end with Il-nam and Ji-hun, it is powerful for a whole bunch of different reasons. But one of them for me as I was watching it is realizing that all this guy was living for was some kind of, you know, nostalgic thrill. Like, that's all he really cared about anymore. The actual value of humanity was completely gone to him. And all he really wanted was just to have more fun. That's what he wanted. That's what life was about, more fun. And that was literally like practically the last thing he talks about before he dies. And that is such a bankrupt version of life. And so Ji-hun winning and being absolutely depressed is exactly the right response in many ways. It shows that he is a person of integrity. And it's only after his final showdown and his reminder that, you know, people actually can look out for each other. People can be good. People can show love and support, that he realizes that he can take his winnings, the result of evil, and turn it to something good. I don't think at the end he would ever go back in for the same reason that he went in the first place, which was to pay off his debts. He'd never do it again. He might go in for a totally different reason, to stop it or to fight or to, you know, to reaffirm humanity. And he will take the result of that evil and turn it to good, which is, you know, again, a very Christian message, that you meant it for evil, but God turned it to good. I think that that's a pretty powerful message in many ways.
So going full circle back to what C.S. Lewis said about using non-Christian stories to explore the truths of Christianity, you know, finally, are there some other ways in which the Christian apologists could use these themes? And I think, you know, not necessarily, I mean, sometimes when we've reviewed different TV series, we'll come away with, here's what's going on. Here's what you can talk with about someone. And should you watch it? Of course not. I mean, one of the series that, if our listeners have missed it, was our analysis of the new version of Sabrina the Teenage Witch, which is just straight up dark occultism. So Christians should not be watching that. But what are some of the ways in which Christians could, in just talking with other people, trying to use it as a springboard to talk about spiritual things and Christianity, use this series and its themes?
Well, I think we've talked already extensively about the way that the story has a narrative of darkness and redemption. But again, just to briefly summarize, in the same way that The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe has a sort of a Christ narrative at its heart, I think that on some level you can see this as a story of people are broken, people are evil, they make decisions, bad decisions for understandable reasons, but they're still bad decisions. The world has a great deal of oppressive evil in it, but there is the possibility of hope. There is the possibility of showing love. There's a possibility of helping and blessing people and of turning the wages of sin into something positive. And these are all things that I would be talking about with on a non-Christian, you know, if we're talking about this with a non-Christian, I think that these are all incredibly powerful narrative themes that resonate with Christianity very powerfully. I think, again, as I said at the very beginning of the podcast, I don't think that all Christians should necessarily watch this. It is a very graphic, disturbing kind of thing. I you know, if I wasn't doing this sort of for a work assignment, I don't know if I would have stuck with it. It is difficult. But if you are watching it or you have seen it, there is some redemptive value there that I think you can talk about with other people. And I do think that as a church, as a whole, we certainly need to be engaging aspects of our popular culture. I don't think everyone needs to watch everything. I don't believe that at all. And I think that different people have different strengths and weaknesses, and we have to be aware of that when we engage our media. So I certainly would not recommend this sort of as for church viewing or something like that. There's better stories out there for that kind of discussion. But I also think when something like this becomes such a major cultural phenomenon, culture is a language. Culture is, it's the tissue that holds us together as people. And we do need to be able to speak into that. And if we completely separate ourselves from the kinds of stories that we're telling, the specific stories that we're telling, not just the kinds of stories we're telling, it's very hard to speak into that culture. So I think that's another value to something like this, is just simply, you know, gaining the language. But I do think at base, it is the real value of the story is exactly the things that we've been talking about, that it is a stark depiction of the reality of evil. It is also an encouraging reminder that all is not hopeless. And the show does not explicitly point to God or to Jesus or a Christ figure, because Ji-hoon is not a Christ figure in this, I would argue. And there's elements that you could sort of say is it, because there's a lot of literature and there's a lot of pop culture that has sort of Christ figures in it. Ji-hoon very lightly approximates that maybe, but his resilience, the resilience of his decency in the face of indecency, respecting humans, of loving God's creation, I think is a model of Christian behavior. And I think that's exactly what the Christians that do engage this series, that do watch it, that's the takeaway for me, that we can be talking about with our friends and neighbors if we are, you know, and our coworkers, and if we start discussing the series. That I think we could dwell on the dark side of the series. If I was in a conversation with someone, I would want to bring the conversation around to the ultimately hopeful note. I think that the ultimately hopeful note of the series is what I would be focusing on with people. I would be talking about, you know, if I'm talking about this series with someone, especially someone who's not a Christian, the thing that I would be emphasizing is, yes, this world is dark, but there is a possibility for something more. We see that in Ji-hoon. We see actual goodness. Where does that goodness come from? You know, where does he find that strength? And that's an opportunity for discussion. And I think it's a really important opportunity for discussion.
I definitely think so. I think if people are cynical and wonder, is there such a thing as redemption? I definitely do not think you see the same character that you do in episode one, where I had that visceral, like, ugh, I don't know if I can stick with this. This is a pretty despicable character. He's such a loser. He mooches off his mother. He doesn't really care about his daughter. And all he wants to do is gamble. And from that to the very end of the series, it's just such a difference. He's not the same person that he was in episode one.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And that, because I had so many thoughts upon finishing the series. I mean, I watched it fairly quickly for me. I usually watch series over a somewhat longer time, so I have more time to digest it. And my head was going all over the place for the first week or two after I watched it. I was just sitting there going, what am I going to say about this? And the thing that really came through to me and the moments that really stuck with me were Ji-hoon learning to be decent after being an indecent person. And I mean decency in the most profound way. I don't mean in the, you know, the sense of politeness or something like that. Although politeness is important when you're in a concentration camp. But he becomes a very human character in the flawed sense, but also in the, you know, in the sense of someone who can love, someone who can encourage, someone who can respect. He's so discordant with that place. Everyone's depressed and freaked out and unsurprisingly. And somehow he's making friendships with people and encouraging them. And honestly, at the very end, he still wants to save people. And you want to say on one level, Ji-hun, what do you think is going to happen here? The whole purpose of this series is to whittle it down to one person. So why are you trying to save her? You know, like what's going to happen here? And yet he does, because he is a fundamentally, at heart, he becomes a fundamentally decent person. And that is, I think it's a powerful testimony. It's a powerful testimony. And it would be hard to get such a powerful testimony from a less disturbing series. And that's the paradox of something like this. It is a deeply disturbing series. And again, would not recommend it to everyone. I certainly would not recommend this for sort of like a church group viewing or something like that. But because of that darkness, because of that flawed evil, because of that those flaws and the deep disturbing nature of it, that narrative of redemption becomes so powerful, and it becomes a very emotionally convincing sort of thing.
Well, finally, on a much lighter note, I have some fun rapid-fire questions for Kevin so our listeners can get to know our authors better. So it's the holiday season. Are you Team Pumpkin or Team Apple?
Oh, goodness. I guess probably more pumpkin, but I like apples.
And besides what you teach at the university, what do you know well enough to teach other people?
I am pretty good with computers, so I can help people with tech support stuff.
And Christmas is coming up, so is there a favorite Christmas tradition that your family celebrates at your house?
I'm in Canada. We have a different day, but we actually watch the American Thanksgiving Day, and we always decorate the day after American Thanksgiving, and then we break out the Christmas music. And actually, usually the first album is Andrew Peterson's Behold the Lamb of God. And I really cherish that particular piece of music and that opportunity to get into that stuff.
Well, thanks, Kevin, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thanks for having me. It was a really interesting discussion.
You've been listening to episode 265 of the Postmodern Realities podcast. Today's guest was Dr. Kevin Scutt. He has written an online exclusive in-depth television series review about the Netflix series Squid Game. His review is called Searching for God's Grace in Squid Game's Bloody Violence. You can read it for free at our website, equip.org.